Welcome to Your Permission to Pause, a podcast with uplifting and inspiring content to help driven female leaders who want to work smarter, not harder. Great leadership is not all about strategy, managing the P&L, or the difficult conversations. Yes, it's important, but managing our stress and leading ourselves is also a fundamental part of being an amazing leader. More importantly, it's critical to leading a good and healthy life. There are many statistics out there that are pretty scary about stress-related illnesses. The World Health Organization states that 90% of GP consultations are stress-related or as a consequence of illness that has physical symptoms related to stress. Cigna also did a recent study and estimated over 3 million consultations in the emergency department are from medically unexplained symptoms that come from stress, and over 9 million outpatient appointments. It also equates to 23%, according to their study, of the total inpatient spend. And what's really sad about this is that there is still a taboo around talking about mental health, because it seems that it's still culturally acceptable to talk about physical symptoms more than it is about mental health. But the reality is that stress creates so many other physical symptoms as well as impacting our mental health, and we need to start to pay more attention. I also came across another study that listed the physical symptoms that people were experiencing that were driven by stress-related mental illness in the UK back in 2019, and I can imagine it's only gone up since then. In order of occurrence, they were chest pain, circulatory issues, gastrointestinal issues, musculoskeletal issues, women health issues, hypertension, and even stroke. Stress is a normal part of life, and many events that happen to us and around us, and many things that we actually do for ourselves, put stress on our body. But you can experience good and bad forms of stress from our environment, our body, and our thoughts. In this fourth episode of Your Permission to Pause, I want to talk about something a little bit different. I want to talk about stress. I want to talk about hormones. Because as females in leadership, I think it's really important that we start to pay attention to the complexities of our body and we start to listen. First and foremost, it's about looking after yourself. Because if you don't look after yourself, you can't possibly be the best leader that you can be. The human body is designed to experience stress and react to it. And it can be positive, which is called eustress, such as getting a job promotion or being given greater responsibilities, working on the project that you really wanted to. And in this situation, it keeps us alert and ready to avoid danger. It's a natural process, but stress becomes negative, what we call distress, when we face continuous challenges without any relief, relaxation, or space to recharge in between. And as a result, we become overworked and stress-related tension builds. And this can build in many different ways. So when we experience distress, it can lead to the physical symptoms that I talked about earlier, and that can include chronic headaches, upset stomachs, increased blood pressure, chest pain, disrupted sleep. And research also suggests that stress can bring on or worsen certain symptoms or diseases. 43% of all adults suffer adverse health effects from stress. And when we think about dealing with that on a day-to-day basis and then trying to lead an organisation or a team of people, we're actually putting even more stress on ourselves, on our bodies and our minds. So in this podcast, I'm going to talk to you the Whistle Stop Tour guide to hormones and stress. And I'm going to share some of my own personal stories because I wish I'd known then what I know now. And I think it's really important that whether you're leading people or not, as a female, we need to understand our bodies a little bit more so that we can take ownership. If we can raise awareness and be proactive in managing stress, not only can we probably prevent many diseases becoming chronic or fatal, but we can have a much more enjoyable life ourselves. And I think it's also important that we teach the next generation how to live a better life in the process. So I've always been interested in health and well-being, and most of the time, I would consider myself someone that has taken responsibility and looked after myself, eating good food, exercising, being active. And I'm now 51, apparently the average age for women to reach menopause. And if you know anything about that, it can be a hormonal shit show. So if we rewind 4 years, I don't think I need to remind you that we hit a pandemic, and that changed life for many of us in lots of ways. I was definitely somebody who increased my consumption of banana bread. I also increased my consumption of scones with clotted cream because we became a bit obsessed in this house making them. And I can't lie and say that my wine consumption didn't increase as well. And all joking aside, it was a change in lifestyle that I attributed to various physical ailments that started to crop up. I was still exercising every day on Zoom, of course. I was walking a lot. In fact, I've never walked so much. I discovered places I didn't even know existed right on my doorstep. And if I'm being brutally honest, there were lots of things when I look back that I really enjoyed about that period. I spent more time with my family. I got time with my kids I probably would never have got. I exercised more than I ever had. So I was outdoors a lot. And when you look at that on the surface, you could argue that I was managing stress pretty well. And it wasn't till a number of other ailments that cropped up that I did decide to sort of pay attention. It was also at the same time that we were bombarded with the menopause narrative, the perimenopause. Davina was all over the TV. Louise Newson was all over social media. And when I started to consider some of the digestive issues, the headaches, the irritability, I then stopped blaming it on the pandemic and I blamed it on hormones instead. That probably wasn't a lie, but actually in hindsight, what I know now is that I was probably more stressed than I'd given myself credit for. And it was genuinely ignorance, I think, and lack of understanding and wanting to find some logical answer that brought me to this conclusion that it was hormones and that it could be fixed that way. And there probably was some truth in that. There probably was a hormonal cocktail going on. But what I hadn't recognised was how stress was impacting my hormones. And actually, had I tackled that part of it, I probably wouldn't have been in the situation that I was. So I'm just going to talk to you a little bit, give you a really simple explanation as to what happens hormonally. So we feel stressed, which is usually based on what we're thinking consciously or unconsciously. And sometimes we don't even know that we're feeling stressed, but something is happening in our body where there is an emotion somewhere, whether we notice it or not, and we feel stressed. The brain then signals to the adrenal glands to release hormones, the stress hormones that we call cortisol and adrenaline, and this activates our fight or flight. And it's the body's way of helping us deal with the threat. Now, that's great when there is a real sign of danger, such as a tiger wandering into your garden, but let's face it, there are not many times that that happens. But after the threat's gone, our levels return to normal and all is good. The problem, however, is that when we experience prolonged periods of stress, when we switch this on when it doesn't need to be on, this can result in hormonal imbalances and other health issues. Now, whilst there were probably no saber-toothed tigers wandering into our gardens, rewind 4 years ago, there was a pandemic which posed a real threat for lots of people, particularly those with comorbidities, who had compromised immune systems, etc., etc. And the other threats that existed that we perceived as threats or that we experienced as stress were things like homeschooling children, trying to work out how to work on Zoom, trying to deliver what we needed to deliver remotely. I mean, let's not even mention the Lou Rolls shortages. But all of these things created stress, and our bodies start to perceive them as threats rather than difficulties. And when this is happening simultaneously, the brain is switching on the adrenals to release the cortisol and adrenaline constantly. And this floods our system. And even without the pandemic, most of us are experiencing stressful events in our lives on a day-to-day basis, whether it's work projects, parenting, stuff happening in our social life. And then there are bigger issues such as bereavement, divorce, loss of job, and you don't even need to go into economic crisis and all of those things. You know, and in terms of hormones, our cortisol just keeps going up and up, keeping you in this fight or flight mode more than you need to be. And when that happens, it starts to affect our other hormones. So, for example, testosterone becomes depleted and Whilst we think of that primarily as a male hormone, it also affects women in terms of better sleep, libido, and brain function. When our estrogen drops, this is the hormone that keeps us asleep, and this disrupts our sleep cycle. So we might get the 3 a.m. fairy waking us up for a couple of hours. And this becomes a vicious cycle because it puts our body under more physical stress. Then we become more moody because we're tired the next day, more adrenaline, more cortisol, poorer sleep cycle the next night. And so it goes on. There's another hormone called progesterone, which is often labeled as the calming hormone. And that also becomes inhibited when we're stressed. And when this starts to fall, we can feel anxious, on edge, and depressed. Then we turn to the thyroid function, which stress can also impact. That can then in turn affect hormones that regulate our appetite. So then we're reaching for food that we don't necessarily need or isn't nourishing. And this can then eventually affect melatonin that helps us sleep and also shift levels of insulin. So there are so many more hormones than we perhaps recognize. And all of these can be affected by stress when we are in this constant fight or flight mode. Now, when I look back to that period when the pandemic was happening, whilst I didn't at the time feel particularly stressed about it, I did have three teenagers at home, one who was in their GCSE year, one who had just started secondary school. So there was a couple of transitions happening. And when you look over that whole last 4 year period, I've had two go through GCSEs, one go through A-levels. I was working from home. I was learning lots of new stuff. Tech is not my particularly my sweet spot, certainly not a strength. And I had to pivot, as the word became at the time, and learn how to run workshops over Zoom on a daily basis. So there was a steep learning curve for me there. Throw in perimenopause symptoms on top of that, throw in, I'm going to say, abusing my body with, or rather putting my body under more stress with excessive scone and banana bread consumption, throw in a bit more alcohol. And you can see how that is a bit of a melting pot, really. And then you add in, over that period, many of us didn't really learn to deal with that stress in an effective way because we just welcomed the time when we came out of lockdown and we went back to, in inverted commas, normal. Well, of course, we didn't really regain normal for a long time. And then we decided to do a house extension. Then we lost a couple of people close to us. A couple of people had a cancer diagnosis. And so all of these things, which are part of normal life, all happened in a relatively short period of time. And you have the perfect storm for a body under stress. But because I labeled them as normal life and didn't really notice that they were happening simultaneously, because you just sort of deal from one thing to another, I certainly didn't realize that my body was probably stuck in this fight and flight on a pretty much permanent basis. And you then get this hormonal shit show. And that then manifests in physical symptoms. And for me, it was headaches, irritability, gastrointestinal issues. Then we started adding a few dizzy spells into the mix, blood sugar dysregulation, palpitations. And then all of these experiences, when you can't sort of make logical sense of them, then created more stress because I was then having to deal with these things on a daily basis. So it's a pretty miserable picture, but I don't think it's one that is that unusual. And the reason I wanted to talk about this today was because I think we can fall into this pattern where we normalize some of these symptoms, we start to tolerate them, or we might reach for the quick fix, you know, grab the Gaviscon or some paracetamol and some Nurofen. It's easy to do when we're leading teams, we're busy, we've got deadlines to hit, it's easy to go for the quick fix. And I'm not against taking any medication, just to caveat that. What I'm saying is, I think we need to look closer and listen with more attention to what our body is telling us. And you might say, okay, well, that's great from a self-care perspective. And great, I'm going to look after myself. But what does it really have to do with leadership? I think it has quite a lot to do with leadership. Because if you think about dealing with these things on a day-to-day basis, if you take the psychological impact of stress alone, the irritability, the low mood, the anxiety, maybe anger, being more reactive, those things are going to affect our decision making. Those things are going to affect the way we interact and relate to people. And over time, that is going to impact the trust that exists within our teams and in our organization. It's going to impact the relationship dynamics. And those things are certainly not conducive to building trust and high-performing teams. You then look at decision-making. Poor decision-making leads to poorer outcomes. Poorer outcomes then become a stressor in themselves. And as a leader of an organization or leader of a team, you're probably the one that's picking up the pieces for that. So whether it's you or whether it's some of your team members, stress is having a real impact on what happens on the bottom line, never mind what it's happening to people's well-being and enjoyment of life. But there are things we can do. So cortisol, you know, it isn't the big bad hormone. Clearly, it's not helpful if we're releasing it constantly and inappropriately. You know, it is our survival hormone. But what we need to understand is that when that is being released, because it's there to protect us, everything else goes on the back burner. So in a stressful situation, if we are not able to see stress, reframe it, look at it for what it is and deal with it effectively, we are going to pump out more cortisol. And this low-level stress that's occurring on a daily basis that we're not managing proactively is likely to end up with problems elsewhere. So whilst I got completely carried away with the narrative that was existing at the time around hormones, that's it, that's logical, tick. That's probably something to do with the fact that there is still a taboo around experiencing stress-related symptoms in our health. And I probably had some shame around not managing my own stress. So I was in denial, if I'm honest. I probably resisted the fact that it was stress-related. Because as a coach who helps people on a daily basis manage their stress better and identifying with someone who also looks after themselves, I just didn't really want to accept that that was what it was. So I did get carried away with the narrative around hormones and the pandemic and all of those things, but also because I was functioning really well. I was achieving lots. I'd learned loads. I was delivering workshop after workshop. I was getting really great feedback. My business wasn't suffering, quite the opposite. I genuinely didn't realize that I was stressed. So hindsight is a wonderful thing, but I think it's important that we talk about it. I think it's important that we recognize that some of these low-level chronic stressors may not be hugely life-changing, but when they are happening simultaneously and we don't have the strategies to deal with them, they are going to have an impact on our health. And if our health is being impacted, that means our performance at work is being impacted. And if your performance at work is being impacted, it's probably having a ripple effect on other people. So how do we start to manage cortisol as a result of ongoing stress so that it doesn't deplete and send our other hormones out of balance and impact our overall health? There's something that I use, which is really simple with clients, and I try to apply it to myself. I am being even more conscious of this right now, and it's take your meds. So the acronym is MEDS, M-E-D-S, and I'm not talking about pharmaceutical meds. I'm talking about M for mindfulness and meditation. Over the years, I've had a love-hate relationship with meditation. I've also done a mindfulness-based stress reduction program about 6 years ago, which was really good. And I'd highly recommend that. You can actually do it online. It's a 6-week course, and wherever you do it, it's the same program. But if that feels a step too far for you, and for lots of high achievers that run at pace, that work quickly and have a lot on their plate, sitting down to meditate can feel a step too far. And I totally get that. But research shows that even if you only do it for 5 minutes a day and you do it repeatedly and consistently, it can have a huge impact. And if that feels too difficult to sit down and be still, the way I found it easy to access meditation is through yoga, because that's more of an active meditation where you are getting into your body and out of the mind. So there are lots of things you can try in terms of mindfulness and meditation. The E is for exercise. I think we all probably know exercise is good for us, but I think it's also important to recognize that if your schedule doesn't allow for, you know, an hour and a half at the gym or a yoga class or a Pilates class, getting more movement into your life can be equally as beneficial. So if we're getting outside for 20 minutes a day, even better to get out in nature, but moving our body, getting off the tube station, one stop earlier, parking the car furthest away from the supermarket or the gym. I always park mine in the same place at the gym so I can get extra steps in. Just making small adjustments like that so you are moving your body more is a great way to help yourself in terms of stress. The D is for diet, and not diet in terms of going on a diet, but considering what is in your diet. Anti-inflammatory foods are really good. Get some good fats in, high fiber, make sure your food's unprocessed, increase our hydration. Water is so important. You know, we are 70% water, I think it is. Remember that from learning that at school. And it's really important for so many systems in our body to function properly. So even if you only increase your water, you're taking a small step to improve your health and manage all those systems in your body. And then finally, the S is for sleep. And, you know, that can be a challenge for many of us, whether it's because you're disrupted by children or stress or hormones or whatever it might be. But having a better sleep routine to increase the likelihood of a better sleep cycle is really important. I read somewhere recently that a good night's sleep actually starts in the morning. And if we can get outside and have daylight flood our system, it starts to set your circadian rhythm. So no sunglasses allowed. And so going into daylight, I think if you have daylight into your eyes, it starts to help the melatonin production, something like that. Can't give you the technical explanation, but a good night's sleep does start with getting outside. Easier in the summer, more difficult in the winter if you've got a long commute and you leave it in the dark. So meds is one way that you can help yourself manage stress better from a physical perspective: mindfulness and meditation, exercise, diet, and sleep. And of course, that's a great start, but it's also important that we start to think about some of the other things that we can do in terms of managing our mindset, because it's not just the physical things that can help manage stress, but it's the way we think about the things that we're experiencing and reframing things. So connecting with others, getting support through your own line manager, maybe your employee assistance program, a coach, therapist. There are lots of other things that you can do to help manage your mindset. It's also important, I think, particularly important for women, that we start to explore how much we're saying yes and no, because we do have a tendency to try to be all things to all people and we become oversubscribed, and that can also be really depleting. So boundaries are also really important. So when we think about performance at work, we need to consider how we are leading ourselves as well as how we're leading our teams. It's not just about work. And a health practitioner that I worked with many years ago said to me, "The thing is, Jo, women are like Ferraris, and to perform at their best, they need to be finely tuned." So I encourage you to embrace the Ferrari in you and learn to respect what your mind and your body need. So the fine tuning is paramount if you want to live and lead in a way that allows you to follow your big dreams and feel amazing in the process. Thanks for listening to Your Permission to Pause podcast. Please rate or review and follow or subscribe in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. If you are a leader who wants to work smarter, not harder, so that you achieve the result you want without abandoning yourself or well-being in the process, go to jocowlin.com and find out more.